Hi, and welcome to the 5-Minute Business Boost, where you get to choose your 5-Minute Investment. I'm your host, Sam Nix, and I'll be discussing topics under the headings of business development, marketing, photography, and much more.
Today I'm talking about cybercrime. Cybercrime, unless you've been living under a rock, is on the rise in Australia, with some small businesses, or many small businesses, often targeted due to limited resources and security measures. In 2022-2023, the Australian Cyber Security Centre, ACSC, reported over 94,000 cybercrime incidents, marking a 23% increase from the previous year. Mind-blowing. In this podcast, I'll explore the tactics cyber criminals use and provide actionable tips to protect your business interspersed with some real-life examples. There'll also be mentions of podcasts and reports that were of interest to me in building this podcast, and mainly around statistics and our data. So check the transcript in the show notes for the links. So what is cybercrime? Cybercrime is any criminal activity that involves a computer or a network. Basically, it's when somebody uses technology to do something illegal. In the last 3 years, I've witnessed cybercrimes via clients and in a few cases had to walk through with clients through reporting and actioning to prevent future happenings. I'm no expert, but here at home and in our businesses, we take it very seriously and I'm aware of the damage it does. And after researching and a lot of reading and even more research and getting AI to review and listen to reports, I thought it might be beneficial for my listeners if I kept it simple and did a bit of an explanation around it. It is indeed a rabbit hole that will take up days of your life if you do it like I did. But anyway, let's cut through it all and let's see if we can keep it fairly succinct. I do apologise this is a long episode, but I think you'll get some real life examples out of it and hopefully a more raised awareness about cybercrime. So, understanding cybercrime, real life examples, and here's one really good one. So one common attack involves email interception, and this is how it works. Number one, the email is compromised. So cyber criminals gain access to your email account, often through weak passwords or phishing scams. Number two is invoice tampering. So once inside, they intercept invoices you send, they modify bank account details and forward the altered invoice onto your client. Payment misdirection. Your client unwittingly transfers payment to the fraudster's account, leaving both parties at a loss. This happened not only to a client, but one of our businesses via an email, not ours, the receivers. So their email was compromised. It led to a fraudulent payment misdirection on an invoice. And it's a pain in the butt. Anywho, why are we as small businesses at risk? So we often, as small businesses, lack robust cybersecurity measures, making us easy targets. Because really, with all the hats that businesses wear, how do we wear that hat about cybersecurity when we're juggling so many other balls? Anyway, some facts and figures, a mini roundup, if you like, around the data and attacks. Recent Australian Cybersecurity Centre data shows small businesses are increasingly being targeted by cyber criminals, particularly through ransomware attacks, which is on a huge growth spurt. The average cost of a cyber breach for small businesses has risen to approximately $46,000. Not sure about you, but that would sting a lot. Weak passwords, outdated systems, and limited awareness remain the key risk factors for small businesses. EFT Sure, who I'll talk about a little bit later, highlight two fairly significant statistics around this. So they claim 90% of cyber attacks result from human error, and this has actually been backed up by the OAICD data breach report. And they estimate $140 billion of annual cost to Australia's economy. Now, this has been reported by UNSW Canberra security expert Nigel Farr in and around invoice manipulation. And that's why I started this podcast talking about invoice manipulation. It seems to be on a growth spurt of significance. The Office of the Australian Information Commissioner, OAIC, reports the top five sectors in around data breaches because this has a huge impact on us all. So they are identifying health service providers, the Australian government, finance, including superannuation, education and retail sectors. These are the top five sectors that are getting data breached. They also report that 38% of all data breaches resulted from cyber security incidents, of which there were 201 notifications, and 57% of those are malicious or criminal attacks. Absolutely mind-boggling. Okay, so that's all well and good and really scary, Sam, but what can we do? Okay, so a couple of steps that you can do to protect your business. Number one, and I bang on this about all the time in my emails and with my clients, make sure that your passwords are strong. These are your first line of defense. You know, avoid using easily guessed information like pet names or birth years, or the same password for everything. Instead, create passwords with random combinations of letters, numbers, and special characters. Be unique, have a bit of fun, consider a phrase or saying plus numbers. So, you know, have your password, add some numbers to it. 14 characters plus is a great starting point. While I'm on that, please don't use the word password for your password. I've come across so many people that do that. Please don't. A third point in this, use a password manager to generate and store complex passwords securely. Now, of course, like anything, you store it in the cloud or you use some type of software. They're not interpretable, can't even say it. They can be hacked as well. So make sure that the password for that password generator is incredibly strong. And you need to change passwords regularly. I know it's a giant pain in the butt, but you've got to do it. Don't forget you can also buy an index books, and I know they still are around from, you know, giant retailers who sell a lot of stationery, and you can actually handwrite your passwords. Use the alphabetical tabs to do so. And then this book needs to be stored securely. And I often say to clients, do this as well, just in case, because if something gets hacked, you need to be able to access things. And I also put a date. So if I change a password, say I change a password today or tomorrow, I write the date so that I actually know when the password was changed. Anyway, getting back to passwords, favourite examples I have seen are vinyl album cover titles. One that I found was a passphrase from cyber.gov.au, and that was Purple Duck Potato Boat. Absolutely made me laugh because these are the type of things that only you or I would understand when we set a password, and passphrases are pretty cool. Number two, enable two-factor authorization or 2FA. This adds an extra layer of security. Require a second verification step like a code sent to your phone or an authentication. I can't even speak. Authentication. I can't even say it. An ortho app. There you go. I got out of that. Google has a great authenticator. I can't even say it. Oh, God. Anyway, these apps work really well. It only takes you a few extra seconds. And I know it's a giant pain in the butt, but, you know, just think of the potential for somebody to hack in if you don't have that. Many platforms now offer 2FA for free, so enable it wherever possible. An even better layer, and I'm going to digress here a little bit, is to consider if you are indeed a small to medium business that is handling sensitive customer data or an e-commerce website is what they call MFA. So this is multi-factor authentication. Authentication. Might have to say that in about 500 times to get it in my mouth and coming out correctly. But basically, MFA is a broader term that refers to using two or more authentication factors to verify a user's identity. Cheap as it's much like when I was young and couldn't say hospital and it was hotitable. There you go. Something you've learnt about me today. Okay, so the type of factors that come under MFA is really around three things: something you know, something you have, and something you are. So something you know would be a password known only to you and your PIN and or a security question, you know, like what was your favorite superhero when you were a child, things like that. Something you have is the second type of factor. This would be a code sent to your phone, a hardware token. Some banks use this little token on a key ring or a smart card. On these days, you know, apps like Symantec VIP, which is a secure two-factor authentication tool. Can't even say that word. Authentication tool. Can't even say it. Something you are is number three. So this is a bit more high-techy, but biometric data, much like your fingerprints, facial recognition or retina scans. Many laptop services and devices are now offering this. I know when I go to pay for something and if I use my phone, you know, it wants a facial recognition, and God forbid if I don't have my glasses on, it just goes, I don't recognize who you are. So the example workflow with this would be something around the realms of using those three factors. So you would enter your password. You'd enter that code from the app. I'm not going to say the word and get myself more embarrassed, and provide a fingerprint scan. Okay, so you can see how the workflow might work. So the key difference is MFA can involve two or more factors, while 2FA only involves two. Anyway, I digress. Number three, monitor email activity and website activity. So use tools like Have I Been Pwned? Check that out. I will put the link for that in the show notes. And that's really good to set up. Have your email in there and get an alert that says that your email has been part of a data breach. Really good knowledge to have. Number two, I've got 4 points here under monitor email activity and website activity, is watch for unusual activity, like sending emails you didn't write or receiving a heap of strange emails from sites you've not visited. Point three in this is ensure your email is verified. Domain names are best for this. Google Gmail started this some time ago, and it's the process of checking and authenticating to ensure that they're authentic and that they're likely to connect you to a real person, so they're not a fake email. And point four under this one is make sure your website is backed up and 2FA is enabled to log on. Number four, really important, train your team. If you've got staff or employees or people that help, you need to educate them about common cyber threats. Encourage them when they're looking at emails, you know, spot those phishing emails. Look for spelling errors, unfamiliar senders, and suspicious links. You know, like the common one is getting a Netflix or a streaming platform notification to a work email. Many people shouldn't. Some people do not use, you know, their work email for Netflix and streaming services. So look for those weird emails. And, you know, don't be scared to verify invoice changes via direct phone call to a supplier or a client, you know, for literally the sake of a couple of minutes of ringing somebody to say, hey, listen, I'm just checking on your invoice. You've got a new BSB and account number. I'm just ringing to find out if that is correct. So a couple of examples of phishing emails. Now, phishing is not as in fishing with a rod. It's the P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, phishing emails. There's a couple of different examples. So I've got four here. So the first one is a fake invoice scam. So this is an email that appears to come from a supplier with an attached invoice. The attachment may contain malware or the bank details may be altered to reroute payments to the scammer's account. And I touched on that a little bit before. Number two in that, or B, is account verification requests. The email claims to be from your bank asking you to verify your account by entering login credentials on a fake website. These are just so scammy spammy. They come in all the time. Just make sure that you report and block and get rid of those emails. C, password reset requests. Now, quite often you will receive a fake email pretending to be from a service that you may use. It might urge you to reset your password via a link that collects your credentials. And D, a delivery notification scam. So this is around an email or a text that claims a package couldn't be delivered and requires you to click a link to provide details to resolve the issue. Hands up who's received these by text. It drives you absolutely bat poo. But, you know, blocked caller is great for that on phones. Okay, so some of the ways, and as I go through this, a lot of you will go, oh, yeah, I've seen that, or yes, I thought that was dodgy as well. But how do you recognize these phishing emails? Number A is check the sender's address. So look for those slight misspellings or unusual domains, you know, support@banksecure.xyz.com.au instead of support@bank.com.au. Or it might have a number in it, or might have a capital T instead of a lowercase t in the email. B, watch for generic greetings. Legitimate emails often use your name, while phishing emails won't have that data. So they might say, dear customer or hello user. C, hover over the links without clicking. If you move your cursor or your mouse over hyperlinks, you'll actually see the URL in the bottom left-hand corner if you're using Windows. And phishing links often lead to unrecognizable or misspelled websites, or really weird websites. D, look for urgency or fear. You know, phrases like immediate action required or your account's going to be closed are red flags. And speaking of red flags, E is really around the poor grammar or formatting. The incorrect use of English is also a red flag and will make you chuckle and laugh, but hey, delete and block the email. Just get rid of it. Don't click on those links. Legitimate organizations usually have professional communications, while phishing emails may have spelling errors or awkward phrasing, as I've mentioned. Have a look at the email. If it looks dodgy, it will be dodgy. And you know what? It's to capture those times when we're under stress or trying to do 7,000 things at once, or it's 5 minutes before Christmas. So just breathe, take your time. If it looks dodgy, get rid of it. So, how can you protect yourself? I've got three ways here that I've nominated. Number one is invest in security software. So, make sure that you've got reliable antivirus software, and you must keep it updated across all your devices. Use email encryption tools to secure sensitive communication. Regularly update your systems is number two. Outdated software is a common vulnerability. Schedule regular updates for operating systems, business tools like invoicing software, plugs or apps, you know, on your website. Now, I also must mention hardware updates are just as important. You know, that old laptop that I've got in the office that, you know, is 35 years old and it still boots. We don't hook it up to the network when we boot it up to show that we've got this old laptop that still boots, because why? It's using an older, unsupported operating system and it is vulnerable. As are your kids' online gaming consoles, or your grandkids, just saying. That's a podcast just on its own with that topic around gaming consoles. But I digress. Number three, verify large transactions. Many professional services and government agencies now use secure payment verification systems. So this is around confirming changes to bank details with a trusted contact before transferring funds. One recently I was involved in with a client was EFT Sure. This group is a business payment protection platform designed to help organizations securely manage their vendor payments and safeguard against fraud, errors, and cybercrime. For more info, and this isn't a plug, it's just for you guys to understand if you are looking to do large transactions regularly and you want to have a secure payment process. So check out https://eftsure.com/en-au/. If not, just Google it. The process for me was really simple. There was a phone call. Once that phone call, that initial phone call and the message was left, there was a text backing up the phone call. Then I made contact and the person rang me back. Once I proved who I was and they proved who they were, we talked about who the payment was for, where it was going, and they asked me to verify some business details that only I or the client would have known. And it was really around ensuring that that BSB and that account number was correct. Gave me a lot of reassurance because the money was over the $10,000 transaction that is usually flagged by banks. So it was a good process for me to go through. Okay, so understanding your legal obligations. Now, as a business owner, and this goes for our not-for-profits and our larger organisations as well, you need to be aware of your cybersecurity reporting obligations. There's a whole lot of legislation and laws around this now. So the notifiable data breaches, or the NDB scheme, requires businesses to notify the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner, OAIC, and affected individuals if a data breach is likely to result in serious harm. And there is a link for this. Failure to report eligible data breaches can result in significant penalties. And you can download the ACSC Small Business Cybersecurity Guide for comprehensive guidance on protecting your business. Great little guide. I've put the link in this show notes as well, and of course the transcript. So as a business, especially if you have an e-commerce website, there are a few more layers that you need to be aware of. And this is really around customer information and privacy. So business.gov.au has information, and I've put that link in it. And that link discusses the laws around customer information. Some businesses with smaller turnovers still need to comply with the Privacy Act. You might be legally responsible for protecting your customers' personal information. You need to have a clear and up-to-date privacy policy, and you need to comply with a notifiable data breaches scheme. And again, there is a link from oaic.gov.au around the privacy and the Australian privacy principles, which is what they call APPS. Now, these APPS are a set of principles that govern the collection, use, and disclosure of personal information. They also give individuals the right to access their personal information. The APPS are principles-based law which gives organisations the flexibility to tailor their personal information handling practices to their business models and the diverse need of individuals. Okay. So now I have to talk about an emerging threat because, you know, there's always something new. And this one's been poking its head up over the last 5 or 6 years. And there has been a lot of articles, blogs, podcasts, TV reports, you name it, about that. And this is what I'm talking about, is ransomware. So ransomware has become one of the most significant cyber threats to Australian businesses. Criminals encrypt your business data and demand payment for its release. So, you know, you turn the computer on and next minute it says this PC's been taken over and unless you pay me $50,000, we're not going to release it. So there are a couple of things you can do to protect yourself against this. Number one, maintain regular backups of all important business data. Store backups offline or in a cloud service. Keep all software updated with the latest security patches. And train staff to recognize suspicious emails and downloads. Remember, if it's sus, it usually is. Okay, so staying resilient, responding to cybercrime. If you suspect a breach, the 6 things that I've researched that came up time and time again. Number one, change your passwords immediately. Number two, notify affected clients and suppliers to prevent further fraud. Number three, report the incidents to the ACSC via Report Cyber, you know, if you're eligible to do so or under law you have to. Number four, assess whether the breach requires reporting under the NDB scheme. Number five, review your cybersecurity measures and address any weaknesses. And number six, consider whether or not cyber insurance would benefit your business. Many insurers now offer specific small business cyber coverage. And yes, this is a thing now. I spoke to my insurance broker about a couple of insurances coming into 2025. And one of the things that my amazing insurance broker mentioned was small business cyber coverage. So have a chat to your broker. Might be worth seeing whether or not you can have an addition to your insurance. Cybercrime is an ongoing threat, but small business owners can take proactive steps to protect their livelihoods. Strong passwords, 2FA, employee training, and regular system and hardware updates are crucial defences. Remember, the cost of prevention is far less than the potential losses from cyber attack, and it's not really about if, it's about when, people. It's going to happen. So in summary, what is the big takeaway? So to protect your small businesses, be aware of the top five areas: passwords and multi-factor authentication, still can't say it, employee training, system, which includes hardware and software, device updates, email monitoring and transaction verification, legal compliance, and above all, being aware. You need to stay informed about emerging threats by following resources like the ACSC, OAIC, and cybersecurity podcasts. Download that Small Business Cybersecurity Guide. Check it out. And make sure that you're joined up to all the state and federal government business emails as well as the cyber.gov.au email. Because you know what? One little article that goes across all of those emails just might bring you up to speed in the latest cybercrime activities that are happening. Stay safe out there. Until next time, cheerio.
Thanks for listening to the 5 Minute Business Boost. For more information, follow me on socials, sign up for my newsie, or check out my website to see how we can work together to reach your small business goals. Remember, anything is possible, especially in the northeast of Victoria. Until next time, cheerio.